City Council will come back from recess. And I would like to convene the City Council as the Portland Development Commission's Budget Committee, and I would ask the Secretary of the Commission to come forward to call the roll call, and please have our folks come up. I'm sorry, I should have had you do that in the break.
So where do I use that? Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard? Fritz?
We're convening as the PDC Budget Committee. Aye. Or here.
Here.
Sorry.
Adams?
Here. All right, a quorum is present for the Portland Development Commission's Budget Committee. We need to elect a presiding officer for this august group. There are nominations.
I nominate the mayor.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Madam Secretary, can you please call the vote on the motion to elect president of the Budget Committee?
Fish?
I have a lengthy speech for the record, which I will submit, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard? Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right, let's proceed. Mr. Chair, Scott Andrews.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Scott Andrews. I'm Chairman of the Portland Development Commission, and with me this morning are Patrick Quinton, our Executive Director, and Keith Witkowski, who's Department Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs. This is my third opportunity to present the proposed PDC budget to City Council as you sit as our budget committee. I will remind you that there will be a public hearing tomorrow on this, and you are scheduled actually to take formal action on the PDC budget next Wednesday. PDC's size and focus has changed quite a bit in the last 3 years. The merger of the PDC Housing Department with the Portland Housing Bureau and the adoption of the city's economic development strategy has moved us from a housing and development agency to an economic development agency. And we're committed to do more with less, going from 220 full-time equivalent in 2008-2009 to projected 135 for the next fiscal year. We transferred 41 of the 220 in the creation of the Housing Bureau. The rest of the reduction relates to the right sizing given the ongoing trend in reduced resources due to expiring urban renewal areas, slower growth in assessed value, and conservative debt assumptions. Before I turn this over to Patrick and Keith, I want to thank a few people. First, I want to acknowledge and thank our last executive director, Bruce Warner, for his outstanding work over the 5 years with PDC. He remade the agency and forged an effective and positive relationship with you, City Council. And all my commission wish him the best in retirement, if he can stay retired. I also want to thank our mayor, Sam, for his support and leadership for the last 3 years. As I've said before, as chair of the PDC, I couldn't ask for a better mayor. He truly understands the connection between family wage jobs, a healthy economy, and the tax revenue we all need to provide the city services. And he's got a passion for economic development. And finally, I want to thank all of you for sitting as our budget committee. I really appreciate our regular meetings, getting an opportunity to present our plans and programs and answer the questions that you have. And I've always appreciated the calm and quiet dialogue. It's been quite helpful. What we're going to do today, Patrick is going to talk about kind of the overview, the major projects and programs that we see for the next fiscal year, and then we will do the all ever-exciting urban renewal district-by-district review of the budgets and projects, where we will take the time actually to discuss our suggestion with regard to funding the Memorial Coliseum as we get to the Oregon Convention Center. So again, thank you. Good morning, Patrick.
Thank you, Chair Andrews. Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. I'm very honored to be presenting the first budget as executive director. And as Chair Andrews mentioned, things have changed fairly significantly for PDC over the past few years. And I think you'll see that new direction in our budget. And if you look at the budget overview that you have in front of you, you can see, first and foremost, we are, as the chair mentioned, we are a smaller agency in terms of our budget, in terms of staff. So you can see our projected expenditures for fiscal year 11-12 are just over $152 million. I apologize, there's a typo in the header of that slide. It should say $152 million. And that's a decline that we can see going forward. It represents the expiration of a number of urban renewal districts. So it's a decline that we are managing toward. If you look into the individual line items, you'll see that we're in the midst of this decline. We maintain our funding of PHB TIF funded programs. So you see the housing line, it continues unaffected. That will change over the course of the years, but the projects that are on plan for next year will maintain the funding from the previous year. The other thing I want you to notice is that the declines in our program expenditures are more significant in the infrastructure and property redevelopment lines. We've tried on the business development side to make it, to keep that whole as well, to reflect the job creation priorities of the agency. I will also point out that within that business development line is where the bulk of the general fund dollars are reflected in our budget, and so that's also the mayor's proposed budget on the general fund side has been a big help for us in terms of maintaining funding for our job creation activities. And then the other thing I'd like to point out is that you'll see a very significant decline in the administration dollars. I think, as you're well aware, we've made every effort to reduce the size of the organization, the overhead of the organization, to match the decline in resources. The $7.5 million reduction you see is not, it actually overstates it, because some of the costs are reflected now in our business lines, but the number is closer to $4 million as we have briefed you on previously. So, but $4 million is still a significant reduction from 1 year in our overhead, and the organization is committed to continue to look for ways to operate more efficiently and more cost-effectively. So before I get into talking about some of our programmatic activities, I just want to remind everybody with this slide that, and this reinforces the chair's message, that PDC is not just about buildings. We obviously still spend a significant portion of our dollars on redevelopment work, but we do everything we can to make sure that what we're doing, whatever and however we invest our dollars, is about job creation. So you can see a representative list of companies here that we've assisted, and what's interesting about it is you go from large companies to our most recent success, Solo Power, but companies like Vestas, and you go all the way down to neighborhood companies that are shown here on this slide, and it really does reflect, number one, how our strategy is playing out for both cluster businesses as well as neighborhood businesses of all sizes, but two, also the range of tools that we have to help businesses, whether it be enterprise zone incentives, business loans, whether it be storefront for neighborhood businesses, and even our commercial property redevelopment program, which is designed to invest in the rehabilitation of commercial properties, we use as a business development tool. That's the primary tool that was used in the Vestas project. So we will continue to use this package of tools to help grow Portland's economy. And then, as it says, we still do buildings, and I just want to remind everybody, when we do buildings, we think explicitly about the job creation potential. So the Oregon Sustainability Center is one of our highest profile projects. We're on track with that project, and we view that fundamentally as an economic development project, a project which advances our standing in the global economy around the field of green development. And I think you'll see similar efforts in places like the Burnside Bridgehead and others, in which we are combining redevelopment work with job creation work. So I just want to now move ahead to just give a quick overview of the line items for the general fund allocation that's in the mayor's proposed budget. We certainly recognize the difficult choices that you have to make with regard to the general fund, and we truly appreciate the proposed budget and the priorities that it establishes. It's one thing to talk about job creation and economic development being a priority, but I think it's a whole other thing to really put the dollars behind it, and this budget does that. And so we truly appreciate the proposed budget and hopefully be maintained when the budget is approved. This budget helps us support the primary activities of our economic development strategy, as well as our emerging neighborhood economic development strategy. And we've broken it out that way so you can see on the neighborhood side, we will continue to fund a number of the activities that we started, including Main Streets, as well as our one-stop website and phone service center for the for businesses in the neighborhoods, continue to fund programs for the Economic Opportunity Initiative, and as well as adding back technical assistance for small businesses. On the traded sector side, well, I guess we'll go ahead a slide then, because Keith's
Patrick,
got it.
Can we go back to that?
Yeah,
slide
I'm sorry.
For a second?
Sure.
I think it's worth pausing for a second and just making sure the public understands what we're doing here. Urban renewal districts today cover about what percent of the city?
That's somewhere under 15%, but it's close to 15%.
So, in other words, 85% of the city is not contained in urban renewal districts.
Correct.
And you are by law restricted to use urban renewal dollars within districts, correct?
Correct.
So if the city wants to fund a citywide economic development strategy, we have to have another source of funding to do so, correct?
Correct.
And that's where the general fund resources become a powerful tool for your work.
Yes, that's absolutely. I appreciate you clarifying that. I think that's important to state that these dollars are the only dollars that we have available to do work outside of urban renewal areas, and that's where a lot of the work needs to be done. And companies don't always want to locate within urban renewal areas, and we obviously have thousands of businesses that aren't in urban renewal areas, and so this is how we get the work done. So.
Thank you.
Both I would point out on a neighborhood basis as well as a business basis. Many of our neighborhoods are outside of current districts, and we have a plan in place that we'll be bringing to you shortly for neighborhood economic development that points out that we really want to spread the opportunity for people well beyond our urban district boundaries, and we couldn't do it without your help. So thank you.
Thank you.
So as I mentioned, on the neighborhood economic development side, the general fund allocation will help us focus on small businesses, as the chair mentioned, neighborhood businesses, but businesses in traditionally underserved neighborhoods, minority businesses in communities of color. That will be the focus of the neighborhood economic development strategy. The neighborhood economic development strategy using general fund dollars will also support capacity building within these neighborhoods and these communities so that the work isn't just done and funded by city agencies, that we're actually creating the capacity locally to carry this work on. And then the last point I want to make about our neighborhood economic development work is that we really strongly want to improve the leverage that we get from city investments. And our Main Street program is a great example of how the cities have been able to seed business district organizations that raised money privately to fund their operations. We believe that's a model. We've seen it. It's a model, works around the country, and it can work more in Portland. And then the other piece of it is the metric side of it. We really want to be able to show that there are real outcomes from the dollars that we invest in neighborhood economic development. I think you're quite aware of our work on the traded sector and cluster side. This funding will continue to allow us to focus on our original four clusters. It'll allow us to expand to a fifth cluster, the research and commercialization cluster, which really has a primary focus right now of helping realize the economic benefits of OHSU's increasing investment in cancer research and the team that they put together. So that's an exciting initiative that these dollars allow us to staff and assist. It also allows us to continue our work in entrepreneurship with the seed fund and provide assistance, non-financial assistance to entrepreneurs. It allows us to put some money behind our international trade ambitions, which I think we continue to see signs of success in promoting our businesses internationally. Last night, we had an incredibly successful International Business Awards dinner that the mayor hosted, and it was a visible sign of how much progress we're making on that front. And then the last point I'll make before turning it over to Keith on the urban renewal area summaries is is we don't view traded sector work and neighborhood economic development work as silos, as distinct. We view what's one of our responsibilities is to the extent that we grow jobs in the city, whether it be a solo power or Vestas or neighborhood business, that the jobs that are created actually are accessible by neighborhood residents. And so we think the neighborhood economic development strategy is an important piece to allow us to connect traded sector job creation with neighborhood residents, and in particular communities of color and neighborhoods in outer Northeast and East Portland that are disconnected from substantial areas of job growth. So that's the challenge ahead of us, and we really do appreciate the funding support that you've given us in the past and in the future. So with that, I will turn it over to Keith, who will start the URA by URA overview. And I do want to encourage, as Commissioner Fish demonstrated, that you interrupt Keith often so that you can have any of your questions answered. So thanks.
Actually, before he starts, I have a question for you, and that's on the summary page in the big budget book.
Yep.
On page 30, there's a total requirements proposed budget pie chart, and it shows housing at 24% of your budget. Okay. And I wonder if you could just explain for our viewers at home how that is, what you do with housing, what Commissioner Fish and the Housing Bureau do, and why that percentage is 24% rather than 30%.
What page are we?
Page 30 of the big binder.
Right. So our allocation to PHB, we have a set aside in place that has a goal of 30%. Citywide, and then it has specific urban renewal area by urban renewal area goals that either, you know, that can be above or below 30%. The dollars that actually go to the Portland Housing Bureau on a year-by-year basis reflect the project work that is projected to happen during that coming fiscal year. So it really is, it's better to look at it over a five-year period, how we achieve those objectives. But that this dollar amount, the $49 million, really reflects the work, the TIF eligible work that the Portland Housing Bureau projects to undertake in the next year. So, but over a 5-year period, that number, you know, will go up and down.
And with the reorganization, then all that money goes to the Housing Bureau for management.
Correct.
Thank
Correct.
You.
One other issue on housing as well, in terms of the set aside for housing, Resolution 36403 states in its second. Third be it resolved, that the City Council committed to establishing a policy to dedicate a portion of TIF revenues from all urban renewal districts citywide to an affordable housing set-aside fund, or to create another mechanism to ensure predictable, adequate funding and prioritization for housing in individual families. And that was April 20th, 2006, and it was unanimously approved by those present, including Commissioner Sten. I raise this as we get into the general discussion because I think there's been some recent news coverage that would lead one to believe that the requirement was 30% in all districts. It is a 30% citywide average. We specifically debated at that time the differences between the two. We knew that some districts would be more conducive, better cost benefit for subsidized affordable housing expenditures, and others would be less. As it relates specifically to the Rose Corridor, the $21 million that has just recently become available has started to show up on the line items. It is in there for Rose Corridor redevelopment. No question, we have responsibilities to Veterans Memorial Coliseum. This budget does not make a decision about that. We do not want to make a decision about that now, since we are at the negotiating table with potential private investors. And I wouldn't want anyone to assume any amount of public funding at this point. We are committed to renovating Veterans Memorial Coliseum, but we are in negotiations on how best to do that with the private sector investors, and we'll be coming back to council to talk about that more. So I just wanted to clarify that, because the headline and news coverage today would lead the average reader to think otherwise.
Thank you, Sam. I'd also like to point out we have a very complicated budget, and that 49% is relative to what we call total requirements, but that includes contingency, which quite frankly is cash that rolls over into the next year and transfers. In terms of the actual expenditures for PDC, we're proposing $152 million, of which $49 million is for housing. So really a third of the real dollars that we will spend in the upcoming budget is will go to housing.
If I could also just add, and I appreciate the mayor's comments, we are in the beginning stages of what we call a TIF cliff, and we're going to see the actual dollars expended to housing decline, and that's not for any nefarious reason. It's because some districts are expiring, because we're front-loading the spending on in housing in certain districts. In the over a two-month period, we'll make probably the largest investment ever in affordable housing, starting with Block 49 in South Waterfront, which opens the doors to our veterans, to housing in that community. Tomorrow, we cut the ribbon at the Ramona, which is family-friendly housing in the River District. And on June 2nd, we will officially open Bud Clark Commons, which is in front of the train station. Those three projects have substantial public investment in them, and it would not have happened without that. As the housing commissioner, my colleagues know that we take the view that the 30% set aside is a floor, not a ceiling, but that's something the council gets to debate every time it comes up. We are enormously grateful for that resource because without it, we could not be making progress in meeting affordable housing goals. But I will tell you that we also understand that as these discussions go forward, it's a council discussion. And that's why we are in the midst of a review of the 30% set-aside policy at midstream, and we'll be coming back with recommendations to council. But it would be no surprise that this commissioner will always be trying to get the most dollars we can because it is our most reliable source of funding for affordable housing. But the truth is, if you look at the last few years, we have had robust spending of TIF to drive affordable housing. And it is unique that Block 49, the Ramona, and Bud Clark Commons are all in the queue. And as a testament to the public investment, these are taxpayer dollars through urban renewal districts that are allowing us to meet the needs of lower income Portlanders. And I'm extremely grateful for that.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have 7 minutes to go through 11 URAs. I'll do it fast.
See, if I could, though, to make it easier, the process from which these specific items have rolled up from the community is more robust and stronger than ever. And it would probably be most useful, given the time, to sort of point out changes from previous budgets in each urban renewal area, significant changes, so that because council has obviously approved last year's budgets and before.
Okay. So I'll walk through just some highlights then. With Airport Way, again, this is a district that's already reached its debt limit, so most of our resources are coming through the disposition of land. We're continuing to focus on advanced manufacturing. The FBI headquarters is a project that we help with as well. So Rentrak, companies like that are in Airport Way. The Cascade Station redevelopment is a focus, but it's a district with fewer resources as the years go by. Central East Side, this is a district that actually used to probably see more increases in income taxes than property taxes because of the nature of the development and the assistance we've been given to small businesses. And I think in the upcoming year, you're going to see a lot of things going on around the Burnside Bridgehead partnership with a private developer on converting Convention Plaza into a digital hub. The streetcar line will be completed and wrap around from the city down through the Lloyd District through the Central East Side as well. And then also to take on or to take off on Commissioner Fish's point, the old Hooper Center will be opening up in June as well, which is a project the PDC put a couple million dollars into. The Convention Center District, as we talked about, there'll be a lot of discussion in this district. We've got, it cannot issue debt after 2013, so to the viewers out there, it means you can't use your credit card anymore. And so what you will be seeing is conversations between City Council and PDC on how we make some of the final investments in housing in the Rose Quarter area and in a couple other parcels adjacent to and near the Convention Center where there's opportunity for office, for potentially tourism-related investments and those kinds of things. With Downtown Waterfront, I think that the main issue in this district is going to be the discussion of whether or not there's the ability to bridge some of the gaps that's existing right now on Block 33, which is also being looked at for the Awaja Maya store. It's the block that's due south of PDC. It's a surface parking lot. We've got the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine pretty close to being under construction, if not under construction right now. And then there'll be a disposition of some blocks. But the key item will be Awaja Maya. We've got a lot of small businesses, a lot of storefronts that are also looking for assistance. So if that project doesn't go forward, we're going to be able to advance our economic development agenda in other ways. With Gateway, this is another district that's getting a lot of focus over the next year and the coming years. We've been working closely with the mayor's office on really trying to kind of unlock a solution to determining how you take advantage of all the transit access to Gateway and the opportunities to redevelopment Gateway. And so what we're working on right now, in addition to assistance to small businesses, is the Gateway Education Center, which is a multi-partnered initiative to examine whether we can do some redevelopment near transit that provides educational opportunities, workforce, and training opportunities, as well as finding a way to create a little bit more of a center, a little bit more of a brand to the neighborhood in the vision that they want to go. With Interstate, this is one of the districts that probably has, other than River District, the most amount of resources. We'll be bringing an amendment to council in July that's going to have Interstate expand, or at least we're suggesting that it expand into MLK, into St. John's, areas of Killingsworth and Alberta. And what you're going to be seeing is, again, a lot of investment in streetscape improvements. We've got a green innovation park that's underway. And one of the things that make this district, Gateway, and Lentz very important is our emerging neighborhood economic development strategy and how that the philosophy behind that strategy and some of the really new ideas that are being worked on with Patrick Quinton and Kimberly Branham in the mayor's office on how we really want to begin to find new ways to boost these neighborhoods and to help existing businesses and really begin to improve it in a new way.
What's a green innovation park?
So Green Innovation Park is a site where we're going to showcase some innovative green building technology from other parts of the world. So we have relationships with Sanyo Homes and Fagerdala, as I say that right, Mr. Mayor, from Sweden, but two companies that are really pushing the envelope in terms of net zero energy buildings, and where we have the opportunity to have build showcase homes that the public can see, you know, how these operate, and then hopefully we can kickstart local development and manufacturing of these homes here in Portland. So we're looking at different sites that'll just be sites to showcase this technology.
Thank you.
Move on to Lentz. Another thing that applies to both Lentz and Gateway and Interstate is the Mayor's Grocery Store Initiative and finding opportunities to bring grocery stores to food deserts. These three districts are probably going to play a pretty significant role in advancing that initiative, so I want to make note of that as well.
And it's the Portland Plan Grocery Store Initiative, not just the mayor's.
Okay. So with Lentz, we've got some projects we're working on in partnership with the Housing Bureau at 92nd and Herald, which is a great opportunity. Again, I talked about kind of finding the center of Gateway in Lentz. I think that the 92nd Herald site will be a really important opportunity and a great chance for the two kind of bureaus and agencies to work together. The neighborhood economic development strategy that I mentioned is going to play a central role in this, and we'll continue to do our part in assisting small businesses, an acquisition of some property at 72nd and Foster, as well as a continuation of our investments in safe routes to schools. With North McAdam, it's basically the continuing evolution of our biotech partnership with OHSU. We'll be working on as well the Central District Gateway and also beginning to do scope of work on an eco district down there as well.
And I think just to add, we've already seen the beginning of construction in the North District in North McAdam through the Moody Street reconstruction. Light rail construction will begin soon. The OHSU was, and the other universities were able to successfully sell bonds for their center. that over the next few years, it's not going to be just in this budget. The transformation of that part of South Waterfront, North McAdam, will really take shape.
So with River District, as you can see, it's got almost $42 million in resources, which is much, much more than any other district. And you know, the highlights in this district are evident on the slide, but again, we're working in partnership with Commissioner Fish and the Parks Bureau on an investment in Fields Park, which will be coming to our board within the next month or so, which is a very exciting opportunity. Centennial Mills, the vision and the design for that will be something you'll be seeing the PDC board making some decisions on over the next few months. Vestas is under construction near Everett and I-405, which is obviously a wonderful opportunity to bring a ton of jobs to Portland, probably second only to the solo power announcement decision that you'll be getting to participate in later today. And we're continuing to work on Union Station. There's the Yamhill Morrison retail strategy, so a lot of activity, as well as we'll be making a decision ideally on the Grove Hotel, which is the block that's between 4th and 5th on Burnside, and working with private partners on that to find a good use. South Park Blocks is, most of the focus is on both the preservation of Section 8 housing as well as a decision, again, back to council's involvement in the Oregon Sustainability Center and that project. And as you've read, we're also, you know, in discussions with a retailer regarding the Galleria. Right now, if you look at our budget, there are not resources dedicated to it, but we're still involved in talking with them.
If I could just note, Keith, last week we did officially the opening of Upshur in Northwest Portland. I believe that's the 8 of 11 of at-risk properties that were identified as part of our 11 by 13 strategy, and because of the support we've received from TIF in a number of districts, we've saved 8 at-risk buildings. We have 3 more to go and a clear strategy for doing that. And again, thanks to taxpayer funds, we will be successful in preserving buildings that contain some of our oldest and most vulnerable residents who otherwise could be displaced if those buildings are converted to condominiums or for some other use. So we applaud and cheer the use of TIF for that purpose.
Thank you. And then the last district is Willamette Industrial, which, again, this is the history with this district has been it's got a maximum indebtedness of, you know, over $200 million, and, you know, it's probably getting about $1 million next year, which is probably the most it's ever received. So, you know, we're continuing to do what we can to work the edges, to use a new manufacturing investment fund that we have, using the Enterprise Zone, which has seen a ton of activity within the last 6 to 10 months. And we're still pretty optimistic about this district coming around.
Let me respond to the mayor's question. I think in terms of major changes to the budget, as always, you will have seen a couple projects drop off that failed, Grant Warehouse being one, for example. But I think the biggest difference is because of the reduced estimate of TIF resources over the next 5 years and a more conservative estimate of the bonds that we can sell, I think the five-year estimate was reduced by something like $36 or $38 million over the entire organization. So especially allocations for things 3, 4, 5 years out got smaller. Our overhead this year, we worked very, very hard on. We've reduced it by almost $4 million. That's on top of about a $3 million reduction last year. That's in response to Commissioner Fish's point of the TIF cliff. I mean, the resources going forward are going to be much smaller, and so we needed to be smaller from an administrative standpoint. So we took a serious look at the organization, and how we were organized and who was doing what, and right-sized, hopefully, for the next couple of years so we don't have to go through these large layoffs on an annual basis.
And not to speak after you, Chair, but one other thing that you'll be seeing and is that as we continue to focus on the ECDEF strategy and the priorities in the neighborhood economic development strategy, We're continuing to have to make decisions about what that means in funding our partners at Parks and PDOT and other bureaus, and we're doing what we can to continue to keep those partnerships going, but there's a lot of balancing that's going to have to happen and that has occurred.
Further questions?
I just wanted to comment to Chair Andrews. Thank you so much for all the time that you spend as a volunteer doing this, including going on overseas trips and generally being everywhere that you need to be to help the Portland Development Commission and the city further its business development. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Saltzman.
Well, I just had one question, and it's apparently, you know, we have an Endangered Species Act program that PDC in the past has supported, but am I correct in understanding you are proposing not to fund or contribute to the ESA Endangered Species Act program? And I guess what's the logic behind that?
So, and this is something that came up, I think, 4, 5, 6 months ago when previous executive director Bruce Warner was looking at the cuts that we were going to have to make internally and how we were getting beyond the fat, into the muscle, and close to the bone. He decided that the funding that was going into helping pay for staff for that program was just not possible given the cuts we were taking internally to our own staff.
Is there value to PDC of having an Endangered Species Act program at the city to assist the PDC in water-related activities and things like that that you may or may not be supporting through TIF dollars?
I think we think of that body of work as how it relates to the economic development strategy and specifically the businesses that operate along the Willamette and the Columbia, and I think so. The extent that we can support, you know, kind of mutual working arrangement about how businesses operate along the river and meet our kind of environmental objectives, I think we can certainly invest time on that. But as Keith mentioned, we have to see that there is some kind of economic or job creation impact from the dollars we spend, and so if there's an intersection there, I think we can do that. I think that's the filter we have to use for all of our decisions about where to spend dollars.
So if there is an intersection, you are amenable to intergovernmental agreement or memorandum of understanding that would help in the ESA.
I think we can
work.
Yeah, I think we can certainly look into it and talk about it. I'll be happy to follow up with you on that and talk about it.
So, Patrick, I have a question following up on what the mayor said earlier. We're not adopting the PDC budget today. You're presenting it. There'll be a hearing, and then we'll take it up next week. Correct?
Correct.
And if in connection with Rose Quarter proposed spending, we do not currently have a plan before us. That would allocate any money within the Rose Quarter for any particular project involving the Coliseum, correct?
Correct.
And so at some point, we will have a separate vote on that question of whether there is an allocation and whether that has an impact on the set-aside, correct?
Yes.
And that vote will be separate and apart from the adoption of the budget?
Correct. The budget you see in front of you and the line item that you see is what you are being asked to look at right now. So it's Rose Quarter revitalization dollar amount, and that's it. That's and then what the use of those dollars is for a later decision.
Do I need a budget note that states that implicit in adopting the budget we are not revising the target for the district, and that would require an affirmative council action at some later date?
I certainly think it'd be helpful. I mean, I don't know if it's necessary, but it'd certainly be helpful to clarify
intentions. I would propose
intentions.
That as a friendly amendment.
Sure.
I have a question. The proposed general fund investment is up $1.7 million. It's still only 3% of the Portland Development Commission budget. Is this the place where we discuss that, or is it in the city council's budget? I mean, in the general fund budget.
Where my suggestion is... where we had the budget hearing on, well, we had the work session on it.
Yep.
It's part of the, you can do it either place because the right people are in front of you or both places.
I don't have a particular question. I just wanted to clarify for citizens who might want to know whether to testify under this item or the other, and the answer is either.
Either one.
Let me also point out, we will be before you hopefully in late June with the Memorial Coliseum development proposal, about 90% fixed in terms of what needs to be done, how much it costs, where the sources of revenue are. And it will be much easier to make a good decision once you've had an opportunity to see what the needs and opportunities are at Memorial Coliseum versus the other uses.
Anything else from council? All right, thank you all.
Thank you.
How many people have signed up? No one has signed up? All right. Well, then we continue this. At the City Council budget hearing, the date and time I mentioned earlier. And moving on to item number 465.
Okay. Revise sewer and drainage rates and charges in accordance with the fiscal year 2011-2012 sewer user rate study.
So the mayor's proposed budget included a rate increase of 5.5, which was down from 6.5. The Bureau turned in, and what's before us today under 465 is a rate increase of 6%, so more than I proposed. For that reason, we will hear the presentation today, but I will also ask that we delay vote on item 465 until 2:30 this afternoon to have the Bureau indeed come back with a 5.5% rate increase and not the higher rate increase that is contained in 465. Okay. Today is a hearing on the rates. Next week is a hearing on expenditures, potential expenditures of the rate.
Good. Well, I guess, Mayor, first of all, this is a first reading, so there's no vote today.
We have to vote on any amendments today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The reason for the delay is that the 5.5% requires changes to a number of subrates. To come in with a lower amount. So that would give folks between now and 2:30 the ability to make the changes to five pages of rates.
I guess I would appreciate hearing why the difference between the mayor's proposed and the 6%.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that. Okay. So first of all, I want to thank all the community members who were involved with the rate process. The Bureau had a budget advisory committee, and the Portland Utility Review Board both looked at Bureau's rates. And it's a difficult task to understand a budget as complex as the Bureau of Environmental Services, so I appreciate the time and effort from these citizen committees in reviewing the rates. And I also want to thank Dean Marriott and BES Director, the BES Director, and then the Bureau of Finance staff led by Jim Hagrindeman, as well as the staff in the Financial Planning Division at OMF. The Bureau of Environmental Services requested a rate increase of 6.5%, which both the Portland Utility Review Board and the Budget Advisory Committee endorsed. After making further cuts to the 6% level, that is what is before you today as the proposed rate for next year. To get from 6.5 to 6%, we have made over $1.4 million in cuts to BES programs, not to interagencies for parks or anything like that, but these are cutting core programs at BES. And we are also being asked to shoulder an additional 0.5% rate cut from the Water Bureau for the drainage of fountains and Benson bubblers. So that is effectively an additional one. I mean, that is effectively a 1% cut to the Bureau of Environmental Services rate. So I believe with the proposed 6% plus, as I said, absorbing the $450,000 in ongoing as part of the 0.5% of the Water Bureau's cut, that that is, in fact, an effective 1% cut. And that's why I'm proposing this 6% rate package in front of you today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dean Marriott and Jim Hagerman to give us a quick walkthrough on that.
All right. Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, members of the Council. Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. We have a very few slides to show you, and hopefully you'll be able to see them shortly. There we go. The proposed rates will fund the operation and maintenance of the sewer and stormwater utility for the coming year. We'll be before you on June 1st to give you an update on the combined sewer overflow abatement program, but we still have one more fiscal year in which to help pay for that project, which will be successfully concluded this winter, coming winter. We also have additional costs for pumping and treating of the wastewater and stormwater combined that used to go directly to the river and now will be treated at our treatment works in North Portland. Obviously have an ongoing need for proper maintenance and reconstruction of the sewer system, many parts of which are over a century old. We're continuing to implement the Greater Green Initiative and, of course, continuing to participate actively in the Portland Harbor Superfund effort. The capital program is, of course, a significant one. It has been for years and continues. Next year, proposing $111 million of investment. Again, as I mentioned earlier, completing the CSO investment, maintaining the collection system, improving the pumping and treatment works. You can see the green infrastructure investments and extending sewer service to those properties in Portland that do not have sewer service. What's interesting about $111 million investment next year is a lot of this money is recycled right back into the community in the form of jobs and support for local businesses. And you'll see the number there, over 1,500 jobs created or supported by this kind of capital investment in Portland. In order to do that, we need to raise revenue, of course, and so the revenue requirements are shown on the next page, $258 million. And I've listed for you there the main components of the revenue requirements. Next slide, of course, mentions the typical average single-family residential monthly sewer bill will increase by about 6%, as the commissioner mentioned. And there are different components of that rate, the sanitary sewer charges, stormwater charges, and the Portland Harbor Superfund charge. On page 5 is a more complete list of the components of the rate. We, of course, have residential sewer rates, stormwater management charges, and commercial sewer rates and stormwater management charges, including industrial extra strength charges, and then the Portland Harbor Superfund. And so in the box at the bottom of that page, you'll see that the typical monthly residential bill, again, increasing at 6%. The final page is just to show that, as I mentioned at the outset, we're completing a $1.4 billion capital program investment on restoring the health of the Willamette and the Columbia Slough. And a lot of people ask, well, how does this stack up against communities elsewhere in the country as far as what sewer rates are? And I think you'll remember in years past I've mentioned that, yes, our sewer rates are high, but many, many other cities in the country will be catching up and passing us. And this chart is to show you that that is actually going on. We can take small solace in that others are just beginning their CSO abatement investments. But you can see that there's enormous pressure around the country on utilities for making the capital investments necessary to make up for the way most cities were built. And many, many, almost 900 cities in the United States were built with combined systems. They're all having to address them now. Portland will be fortunate in that by the end of this year, we will have completed our major investment.
You've certainly done a good job on that. I'm wondering, why are Lake Oswego and Dunthorpe-Riverdale so much higher than ours?
Lake Oswego is working right now on a major investment program, you may have read about the replacing the sewer line under the lake in Lake Oswego, very costly and expensive. That sewer line was actually leaking into the lake. They've also decided that it's time for them to upgrade their collection system. We run the treatment plant for Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland there at Tryon Creek, but they maintain their entire collection system. They've determined after study that they need to invest in their collection system, so they've increased their rates.
And how about Dunthorpe? Why are they so high?
That's a kind of an interesting one. The Dunthorpe Riverdale District is a special service district that we provide a service to them, and they charge their customers to reflect actually what the actual costs are. So they have a rather unique landscape and topography, including some pumping stations that are rather costly to maintain and operate.
And Seattle's is $78.32 a month. And that's because why?
They're also in the midst of a CSO abatement program and enormous initiative to protect the health of Puget Sound. Also, they have ESA listings in the Puget Sound area, so they're aggressively working on improving water quality.
Why are Beaverton and Washington County so low?
I can't address that, although I know Washington County has enjoyed a lot of SDC revenue from growth over the last 20 years or so. They are proposing a significant rate increase this year.
Thank you.
I'm happy to answer any other questions. I meant to say that I'm finished my presentation. So
I did want to follow up on the point Commissioner Saltzman made about the Water Bureau discharge fee.
Yes, sir.
That amounted. So my understanding is that we provide maintenance to the Parks Bureau's fountains in various locations in parks and other places throughout the city. Mm-hmm. We provide the water to that, and that part of those fountains' responsibility to us is maintenance. And when we discharge the water to maintain the fountain, then BES actually sends the Water Bureau a bill for the water that's discharged. And we determined that was 0.4% of our budget. Is that correct, David?
0.4% of the rate increase.
0.4% of the rate increase. So maybe I could ask David to come up here too, so because I want to ask a question, but I want to frame it correctly.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to determine is because the Water Bureau's budget is quite a bit smaller than the BES budget, what is the impact, the actual impact on your budget of us not increasing our rates by that 0.4%, but obviously then you don't get that revenue. What is that actual impact on your rate?
Okay, it's a very good question. There's two parts to this, I understand. There's the decorative fountains and the parks-related fountains, and then there are the Benson bubblers, right? And my understanding, it's about a $450,000
right
amount. So I don't have in front of me, Jim, what the impact would be, but why don't you go ahead?
It would be about 2 to 3 tenths on the rate increase.
For us?
Yeah.
2 to 3 tenths. And just cutting that in half, if you assumed, averaging that, if you assumed that was 0.25%, that would, and maybe does financial planning have any more accurate numbers than that? That's very close to accurate. So what I'm trying to get to is if that is part of the rationale for coming back with a 6% increase versus the mayor's request that you come back with a 5.5% increase, what is the actual impact of those discharge fees on your rate increase? And if we assume that it's, say, 0.25%, then that would bring, if that's the argument that's being used, that would mm-hmm. bring the rate down to naturally 5.75%, 5.75% rate increase, not the 6. So was that the sole justification for the difference in what the mayor requested and what you came back with?
That's not the sole justification, okay. But I think that is part of the rationale of coming back with 6%, because, you know, as I said, there is, as you've just identified, there is a rate impact with absorbing those lost revenues, so to speak. You know, not debating the merits of pro or con, but there is an impact of losing revenues that we otherwise were getting. But the other rationale is that we've took a good look at our budget, and it's been scrubbed by the Budget Advisory Committee and the PERB, and we feel that the $1.4 million on top of that $450,000 loss is real cuts, and that's what I feel I can support as being the commissioner in charge of the agency in terms of fiduciary responsibilities, and accorded to me.
Well, the mayor's proposed under the, it is part of the budget process that the mayor proposes, takes in all the recommendations from the Bureau Budget Advisory Committee, on this case, the PERB, the public, the Bureau of Financial Planning, discussions with my colleagues as a whole, and I'm going to propose that we stick with the 5.5 and not the higher BES fee of 6. This is a huge budget. What's your total budget, annual budget?
About $300 million.
$300 million.
Capital, including capital.
$25 million in PTE miscellaneous.
What does PTE mean?
Professional, technical, and expert contracting. $6 million miscellaneous line item. And although it has been scrubbed, it can be scrubbed some more. And today we would establish the rate, and I'll soon make a motion, and we can decide from here, and then the basis of discussion will be can be around either the higher rate of 6% or the lower rate that I propose at 5.5%. But I think more scrubbing, as good a job as you've done and as good a job as everyone else has done, more scrubbing can happen. I realize that you feel that feel differently. I respect that. We have an honest disagreement here. This gives you a week to come back with additional cuts. On the issue of fountains, for those of you listening, these are very complex budgets, but up till this point, the entire cost of the city's fountains have been borne by ratepayers. I believe that it should be borne equally. We shouldn't have the Sewer Bureau charging the Water Bureau for providing fountains. Each should bear its appropriate charges. The Water Bureau provides the water. It has to provide, it eats the cost for that, and it also does maintenance. The Sewer Bureau should be providing the discharge of the sewer waste. So that's separate from the issue of, separate but part of the issue of rates. So I move that we delay the...
Before we do that, can I ask Andrew Scott to come forward?
But we'll take testimony this morning.
And before I ask Andrew Scott a couple questions, I want to, for people listening, understand why I'm putting Andrew on the spot. When I served in the legislature, the executive department, the governor, proposes a budget to the legislature. And, of course, the legislature doesn't depend upon the executive department to explain to it where they might have programs and services that maybe aren't as crucial as, say, other services. They leave that up to the legislature to figure that out. So legislators on their own don't have the expertise to delve into the governor's budget and try to figure out the nuances of it and where there might be money that doesn't do things as they are represented to be. So the legislature has its own budget office that analyzes by experts what the governor proposes. Andrew Scott is the head of the city's version of that office. And I've always recognized, because of my background, the importance of the role that the financial planning office does. But I'm not sure everybody in the city recognizes that you have a very difficult task to perform, in that you're serving for a mayor who proposes a budget that at times you actually might have criticisms of, if I can put it that way, or different views of. And it is your
suggestions.
It is your responsibility in this strange form of government we have to come back with observations that are sometimes at odds with your boss. I've always valued that and appreciate that, and thus I'm going to ask you and hopefully the mayor would consider this, that I think in many ways it would be a better use of all of our times and resources.